You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, generous, jumping, jolly geniuses. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 147, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your gaggle of grinning, guffawing goofballs and geeks.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And still no Chris.
We haven't found him yet. Yeah. He's around here somewhere.
Yeah.
We're not going to get him out.
Check the refrigerator?
He's always the last place you look.
Yeah. Well, you stop looking after you find him.
Good point. Yeah. Good point.
I have a headline. We haven't done a bizarre headline
in
a while.
What you got?
Okay. This is weird. In Hamburg, in Germany, there is a kind of like a bar town or a party kind of area in Hamburg. Here's the headline. Urinators in Germany warned. St. Pauli walls pee back.
What?
So St. Pauli is kind of the bar and club entertainment kind of a part of Hamburg. And which means there are a lot of people who go out drinking and they would just pee on the walls or, you know, just pee in public and pee on
public,
the walls.
Public urinators.
Okay. Yep. And so St. Pauli, that community, have painted the most peed walls with a special paint that is designed to repel urine.
What?
Or repel fluids or liquids. So the paint is super hydrophobic. So, you know, does not like water. And so it will bounce.
Ew.
A little bit. Yeah, it will. I mean, not like straight bounce. It'll
that would be really funny.
Yeah, it'll bounce back like to your feet.
Ew.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Your own pee on yourself if you pee on these walls. Yeah, so very, very smart. Really
that
good.
Is.
You know, really good use of this paint.
That is. I'm sad that it had to come to that, but yeah.
Yep, the party district, St. Pauli in Hamburg, Germany.
And the walls pee back.
Yep. That, no, so the paint, it says, don't pee here, we'll pee back. In German, of course.
Yeah.
Naturally.
And but it's one word in German.
Yeah. So a lot of the bar owners, a lot of the people in the community, they're just kind of sick of having to clean pee or to deal with public urinators. So there you go.
I don't know how to follow that.
Science!
Science!
Yay! And let's kick off our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz, Hotshot, Dana versus Colin. And here, super random card. I don't know what version or what card. Here, I'm closing my eyes. All right, I got one.
All right.
Here we go. Oh, it is the silver screen edition of Trivial Pursuit.
Okay.
Here we go. I guess, I don't know the, I don't know the category names. It says set. So I bet setting.
Okay.
What was the outbound destination of the Bounty?
Oh.
I don't even know what this is referring to.
Yeah, well, like in Mutiny on the Bounty.
Yeah.
What was the outbound? Well, yeah, where were they going?
Colin.
London.
Incorrect.
Bahamas.
It's tropical. Tahiti.
Okay.
Tahiti.
Makes sense.
All right.
Yeah.
The next category is pink, and it says tit. But I think it means title.
I hope so.
Yeah.
It just got
silver
a little
screen.
Blue.
Yeah, T-I-T.
Okay.
What 1962 flick featured Steve McQueen as a fanatical Flying Fortress flyboy?
62, Steve.
Flying Fortress, proper noun.
Oh, okay.
Flying Dutchman.
Incorrect. So the title of the movie.
Oh. Right. 62, Steve McQueen. Got a war movie. I don't know.
What is it?
The War Lover.
Oh.
Huh.
Okay.
Never heard of it.
I don't know that one.
Random Trivial Pursuit, man.
Yeah.
All right.
That was a long time ago.
Still Steve McQueen. I don't know. But yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Next one, yellow category OFF, off. Not really sure. What actress wound up in a pink jail cell in 1982?
Maybe that's off-screen?
Oh, maybe. Oh, yeah, off-screen.
Okay, yeah. Actress in a
pink jail cell.
In 1982.
Actress. Zsa Zsa Gabor?
That's not a bad guess. That's not a bad guess, yeah.
In that vein.
Who?
Sophia Loren.
Okay. I wish I had more details on the Sophia Loren in the pink jail cell. Like, we'll have to look that one up.
That's weird.
That sounds like there's an interesting story.
Sophia Loren spent her first night behind bars in a private pink-walled cell with a private bathroom and a black-and-white TV set.
What was her transgression here? Why was she in a jail cell?
The 47-year-old film star returned to her native Italy Wednesday to begin serving a 30-day sentence for tax evasion.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, sounds like she had it pretty rough there. Yeah.
Yeah. Man. Next one says, category is on. So I assume on screen.
Okay.
Who sang Pinball Wizard in the movie Tommy? Yeah. Colin.
That's The Who.
Incorrect.
Oh. Oh, okay.
Who sang that song? Actor. Pinball Wizard.
Oh. In the movie.
Oh,
Was it Elton John?
Correct. Oh. It is Elton John.
All right, okay.
He was, I guess, the former Pinball Wizard, and now he's singing about Tommy.
That's right.
All right, teal, green. Oh, green category for PRO, pro. Who conceived, wrote, and directed The Producers?
Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks, correct.
I think those people are the same people in my mind. I just realized.
Mel Blanc and Mel Brooks.
I think I was conflating them.
All right, last question. What real-life cop did Al Pacino play in 1973? God, what year is this card from? Colin.
That was Serpico.
Frank.
Frank Serpico. Yes. The movie was Serpico.
Oh,
I see. Yeah, right. He did have a name. Frank Serpico.
It doesn't say year, but this seems kind of a
oldish
card.
You're right.
Maybe from
you're
the
right.
80s.
All right, I'm not done yet.
Oh.
Two episodes ago in our all quiz, Chris did something interesting. He basically wrote a quiz challenging each other between me and Colin because I'm very strong at Disney, so he asked Colin Disney questions. Colin's very strong on sports, and he asked me sports questions, but these are, like, generic, easy to get if you're fans of those things.
Okay.
So a listener wrote in and made a quiz to challenge you, Colin.
Uh-oh.
Since you are a Marvel fan and a comic book expert. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Dana these questions to see if she gets them. What do you mean, boo? Are you ready?
I'll just be sending you mental.
Right. Yeah. Right.
ESP.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is from Megan, her Marvel character quiz. Here we go. The actor that portrays this character in the movie was actually the model for the comic book character. So the comic book character came first, was modeled after an actor. Turns out that actor then played this character in movies.
That's an interesting one. Let me see here.
Maybe like Lou Ferrigno. Is Marvel Hulk?
Hulk is Marvel.
Okay.
Hulk is Marvel.
Okay.
I'm trying to think.
Not Tobey Maguire. I mean, no.
Yeah, the eras
Must
don't
be an
really
older
line up.
One. Oh, maybe Superman?
I don't think that's DC. That's DC.
Okay.
I think the eras don't line up. Oh, that's interesting. I'm kind of trying to run through here. I'm not sure.
I knew this one.
Well, it's not Tony Stark.
No.
It's not Captain America. It's not Spider-Man. It's not Thor. It's not...
It's in the Marvel Universe.
Okay.
It's not Black Widow.
Is it like Storm? No, it's not. No.
Is it the Hulk?
No.
I don't know.
Colin, do you know? You're not sure either.
It's got to be somebody... It's got to be a more recent...
You're going to kick yourself.
Based... Yeah, I'm sure I am. It's got to be somebody just obvious I'm not thinking of.
Nick Fury. Samuel L. Jackson.
Yes, of course, the new Nick Fury. That's right. They redesigned Nick Fury for the Ultimates, and they
completely after Samuel L. Jackson.
That's right.
Then he played him,
and he does, and he really does look just like the comic. Yeah, yeah.
All right, Dana. Who was the first main character of Marvel Comics in 1939? First main character of Marvel Comics in 1939. Here's a hint. He was later revived in Fantastic Four.
Captain America?
Incorrect, Colin. Do you know?
I believe it's Prince Namor. Yeah, is that who they're looking for? Namor the Submariner.
Incorrect. Mm. It is the Human Torch.
Oh, right, right. Okay, duh. Huh.
Asterisk. At first, he was an android who could surround himself with flames, but then in Fantastic Four, he was a human with fire powers. Of which character, who now has at least one movie, did Stan Lee say, I thought it would be fun to take the kind of character that nobody would like, none of our readers would like, and shove him down their throats and make them like him?
Oh, interesting. Somebody nobody would like. Incredible Hulk?
Incorrect.
Oh.
It's going to either be Iron Man or Spider-Man, would be my guess. Character that nobody would like and shove it down their throats.
It's funny, out of those two,
that he would say it that way. Yeah, I don't know. I'll guess Iron Man.
It is Iron Man, Tony Stark.
Yeah, because he's kind of abrasive and he's kind of a jerk. Oh, I guess maybe that's what he means.
Robert Downey Jr., though, is the exact right person to play.
All right, number four, Dana. Which actor portrays two superheroes in the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Which actor does two of them? I don't know. Whoever plays Spider-Man plays evil Spider-Man. I don't know.
Evil, just say evil Spider-Man.
It's not Mark Ruffalo. I have no idea.
Colin?
Two heroes.
Yeah. We've mentioned both of these heroes.
Okay. Not Chris Evans.
It is Chris Evans.
He's in the Fantastic Four.
He's Human Torch.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
That was one of his first big movies.
Man, that's right.
He's the brother.
That movie was so bad. Yeah. That movie was so bad.
I think I fell asleep.
Yeah.
But Chris Evans, yep. He was Human Torch.
Oh, you're right.
And now more known as Captain America.
Okay.
And he was actually pretty good at being cocky, kind of Johnny Storm. Yeah, you're right. I forgot about that. Yeah, I even said it and I couldn't remember.
All right, last question. True or false? 50-50. Okay. Spider-Man shoots webs from his fingers.
False.
Correct. It is false.
From his wrists.
Yes. Yeah. His web shooters attach to his wrist, but his hands are sticky. His fingertips are sticky.
Yeah. Well, and in one of the movies, they actually made them come out of his body. They changed a little bit. Like in the comics, it was originally like a thing that Peter Parker invented. But they made it biological in the movie, so it's a little grosser.
Excuse me, they made it more biological.
Yeah.
I like how you're mocking him.
in a sub quiz about comic books on a trivia podcast, yeah. I'm being mocked for being.
Guess what? Well, it's more bold.
Okay, Professor Marvel.
All right. Well, thank you, Megan, for this kind of hard quiz. It was kind of rough.
It was good. Made you think.
Made you think. All right, this week, it seems like we're nearing the end of flu season. People were dropping like flies. Yeah. I got sick. I got super sick for like 2 months. And so we thought we would talk about medicine this week. Just weird things about medicine, weird facts, quizzes, trivia. And so
this week, turn your head and cough.
No, it's bad.
So this week, the doctor is in. The diamond, the coconut, you called your doctor. Woke him up, said, doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, doctor, to relieve his belly ache. I said, doctor. Said doctor, to relieve his belly ache, you put the lime in the coconut, you drink them both together, put the lime in the coconut. Although we are not professional doctors,
we are not
in any sense.
We don't even have PhDs. None of us do.
No. Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's true. We're not even academic doctors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our show should be used as an absolute, literal last resort for medical diagnoses and medical problems.
Yeah. But for facts, yes.
Sure. Yeah.
Weird facts?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Giggles, laughs around the bar, fine. Life-saving advice.
No.
Please look somewhere else first.
No.
I will start us off. I have a grab bag, general trivia, medicine, and medical-related terms quiz for you guys. I will begin with a question that I know we've had a pub quiz before.
Oh,
so, these are the ones. We got to see. How well do we remember this? I think you guys, between the two of you, you guys can team up if you want here. As you know, ancient and medieval medicine often focused on the idea that if your humors were out of balance, you could attribute most maladies to an overabundance or underabundance of a particular humor. There were four humors. So please tell me, what were the four traditional humors?
Blood.
Yes.
Black bile.
Black bile.
Yeah.
And yellow bile.
Yes. Yeah.
Phlegm.
Yeah. There you go. That's right. Blood, phlegm, black bile, yellow bile. Yeah. A lot of bile going on.
Yeah. Two kinds.
Two kinds of bile.
Are there really two kinds of bile?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, again, I mean, we should mention
What's bile?
Well, so they believed that black bile was generated by your kidneys and your spleen. They believed.
Is it poop?
It was related. It could be related. And, you know,
it's just pee and poop.
Their concept of phlegm was not exactly what we talk about when we talk about phlegm. Not exactly the same.
Okay.
Yeah, phlegmatic.
Blood,
right?
Blood they got right. They got the blood right. Yeah.
All the fluids in your body, they kind of boiled down to four categories.
Dana, though, as you said, you're right. Yeah. Like somebody who had too much phlegm, they were phlegmatic.
Yeah.
And you guys, do you know melancholy?
Yeah.
Yeah, like that's, you had too much black bile. Like melancholy literally means black bile, dark bile.
Oh.
The idea being that if you had too much, you would be
a
melancholy person. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. If something is ototoxic, O-T-O, toxic, if something is ototoxic.
Okay.
What part of your body is being harmed?
Oto, man. Oto, no, that's Onor. Ono Centaur.
Yeah.
Ono Centaur.
Oto, what part of your body has toxins or is toxic?
If something is ototoxic, it will damage this part of your body.
Your ear?
It is your ear.
Oh, whoa.
Your inner ear in particular.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's so specific. What do you mean it's toxic to my ear?
You can damage the neurology and the functioning of your inner ear.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. You can cause deafness, partial deafness,
complete deafness.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Ototoxicity. Yeah.
Okay.
Over a 10-year span in the mid-1300s, this disease killed an estimated 30 to 60% the entire population of Europe.
Wow.
Yeah, it was bad news.
Yeah.
What disease is this? The mid-1300s.
Oh, the Black Plague?
It was
Black Death?
It was the Black Death.
Yeah.
Yeah. The old favorite, the Black Death.
Yeah.
Wait, is the Black Plague and Black Death two different things?
So the Black Death, I'm so glad you asked.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
So the Black Death actually, you know, people will commonly say, oh, the bubonic plague. But it's, the Black Death was a collection of plagues. It was a potpourri of plagues. The Black Death collectively was bubonic plague, septicemic plague, and pneumonic plague. And they were all, I mean, they were all bacterial. They were all caused by the same bacterium. But it wasn't any one particular.
It's a cocktail.
Yeah. Any of those plagues was part of the Black Death.
Wow.
They estimate it killed more than 20% of the world population when it was at its worst.
Wow.
Yeah, it's bananas. Oops. Glad we do not have to deal with that on a widespread basis. Moving right along, I'll try and cheer it up from the Black Death.
Okay.
What part of the body does a hepatologist study?
H-E-P-A,
tologist.
Well, hepatitis. Kidney or liver, like,
You're on the right track. You're on the right track.
I don't even know what body part gets.
Well, if you have hepatitis, what is affected?
Kidneys. Liver.
It's liver. Yes. Hepatology, the liver and the livery systems.
Okay.
And that's why it's hepatitis.
Yeah.
Hepatos just means liver.
Mm.
To be honest, I actually don't know what some of our body parts, inner organs.
Hepatitis in the ears, right? That's the one. Yeah. What? This is a great medical word here. What does a sphygmomanometer measure?
Oh.
I know you have seen one.
Yeah.
I know you have encountered one.
Blood pressure.
Yes.
Oh!
It's blood pressure.
The sleeve?
Yeah, the little pumpy sleeve that they wrap around the cuff around and inflate it. And yes.
Can you say it again?
Sphygmomanometer. This is a fantastic word. And that's S-P-H-Y-G-M-O-M. A-N-O-M-E-T-E-R.
That O is the first vowel that shows up.
Sphygmos. Sphygmos means pulse.
Oh.
And then manometer is just like a pressure gauge or a pressure meter. Yes. Sphygmomanometer.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Last one here. introduced just 2 years apart in the 1890s, these two drugs sold by the Bayer Corporation both ended with the letters IN.
Aspirin.
Aspirin is one.
Oh, what's another? Claritin. No, that's a brand name.
Ibuprofen?
1890s. I'll give you, they were, so like aspirin, this other one was originally a trademark name and is now a genericized name.
Huh.
So aspirin was official Bayer.
Pamprin.
What's the, get little, yellow, new print.
You got to go back even further.
Oh.
Let's say that one of these drugs is very well respected these days. The other drug is not so well respected.
Not morphine.
Cocaine.
You're on the right track. I'm looking for heroin.
Yes, Bayer made heroin.
Heroin and aspirin. Two of their biggest sellers.
Wow.
At the turn of the century. Lots of aspirin, lots of heroin. They don't sell quite as much heroin anymore. Does the Bayer?
Do they still do?
No, they don't.
Sell okay. You say as if they still they kind of scaled back the production levels of it.
No.
not as much compared to aspirin.
Yeah.
Aspirin and heroin both made Bayer Company a lot of money. Both now genericized, of course, in different areas of life. All right, that was our intro to medicine here. Good job, guys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we are not professional doctors, and this will be very clear in my next segment.
Okay.
I think even before we started Good Job Brain, I think this was in our Kickstarter write up in our Kickstarter biography. I've always been so interested in the secret vocabulary and career terms doctors use to describe patients.
Yeah.
And this is not, obviously, medical students and medicine professionals, you can, of course, write in and say that, you know, we don't use these anymore, or here are some more that we use. Half of it is they use these kind of code words is because it's faster. It is faster to write on a piece of paper or on a clipboard, like, this is what this patient is suffering from or is what is like.
Mm.
Yeah. The other one is basically to maybe...
Secret code.
Yeah, a secret code, maybe to trash talk a little bit. So here I have a list, and I'm not going to do quizzing because some of these are really specific. I'm just going to share some interesting ones with you. A gunshot wound is called acute lead poisoning, or ALP.
Really?
And a lot of these terms also is trying, you know, when they're conversing from nurses to doctors or doctors to doctors, to not freak the patient out if they're there.
Right.
You know, so that's where the code plays in too. And not only is ALP, acute lead poisoning, a gunshot wound, there's different specific types of it for different gunshot wounds. So there's 185 grain injection acute lead poisoning, which is a 9mm gunshot wound. And then air conditioned acute lead poisoning means multiple gunshot wounds. It's just, it's really
tongue firmly in cheek.
Yes. A lot of these are pretty cheeky, but you know, if someone's family is there or you don't want to freak someone out, you know, you kind of just, you know, like ALP, like, oh, got it. Okay. Some of these I'm sure do not get used anymore because some of these are kind of like mean to the patients.
Okay.
Maybe they still get used. Maybe there's a whole new subset of vocabulary these days. Yeah, there's some, like, I think it's just more like diner or career slangs. Like, baby catcher is OBGYN, obstetrician, right? Because they're catching babies.
It's like we're in an old-timey diner.
Yeah, and Blinky the fish is a radiologist because of the...
It's like The Simpsons.
Yes, the three-eyed fish from The Simpsons.
That's great.
because of the radiation.
Boneheads. Of course.
Boneheads.
Is the
orthopedics.
If is an anesthesiologist like the Candyman or something like that.
Let's see. No.
Oh. Sandman. Put you to sleep.
Oh, that's a good one. Chocolate hostage.
Chocolate hot constipation.
Yeah.
That's gross.
So terrible.
That's not very professional sounding either.
I think a lot of these are just doctors trying to make other doctors laugh.
Actually, if any medical professional is listening and is like, oh no, we use these, let us know. I'm curious.
I'm sure they're like newer ones.
You don't think chocolate hostage has just certain timeless, just a timeless charm to it.
I can't place it in time.
Oh my god.
It makes me just shudder.
It's really gross.
Do you guys know the term gomer? Have you ever heard of that one? A gomer?
Get out of my emergency room?
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly
what
it is.
Wait, so do you call, is a person a gomer?
Yeah, like this gomer, you know, it's like basically,
oh, someone's like, I want to be in there.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's like, I need this person out of my emergency room.
And this is one of my favorite ones. I'll end it with this. A Jack Bauer is a doctor still up and working after 24 hours. Okay, one more. Sorry. It's so good. A Pokemon is, well, we say Pokemon, but doctors pronounce it Pokemon, which is the medic who drains abscesses. Because you're a Pokey. He's a Pokemon. In the UK, they're called Lancelots because they lance a lot.
That's good. That's cool.
The Lancelot is good. That's, It certainly seems, it sounds classier than Pokemon. Lancelot. Oh, I'm the Pokemon.
I'm the Pokemon.
We need security over here right now.
There's so many of them. I'm sure it ranges from hospital to hospital, from clinic to clinic.
And a lot of gallows humor.
Yeah. There you go.
All right, I have a tidbit about doctors for you. Speaking of like goofing off, but this is goofing off that pays off as well. In 2007, there was a study that found that surgeons who played about 3 hours of video games a week were better at laparoscopic surgery than others. They were faster and they made fewer errors. And so laparoscopic surgery is the surgery kind of through that tube. It's there's a light and a video camera, and then they like maybe extract some tissue through the
little
tube.
Keyhole surgery.
Yeah, it's a little keyhole surgery.
Wow.
So they're better at controlling the
hand-eye coordination.
Like a video game.
I mean, it totally makes sense. You practice doing that for hours a week. You probably
I'm really good at that claw machine. You know, that you see at like the amusement
maybe
park.
You
so
should be a surgeon.
Ergo,
yeah,
I'm a good surgeon.
The finding from this study was that video game skill correlates to laparoscopic surgical skills, and that training curricula should include video games because it will help them with the technical interface between the surgeon and the screen.
That makes sense.
That makes
sense.
Well, you know, they have all the kind of the space, the astronaut simulation test, right? I mean, that technically is a video game because there's a screen simulating what happens. And
yeah.
Depends on what video games, though. You know, if it's like a button masher, I don't want that person to operate on me. It's like, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but even then, it's like, oh, I move around. I'm getting used to, like, the speed of things. You're mapping it.
I'm playing lots of Minecraft. Where's the square heart?
Anyway, video games for the win.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. A word from our sponsor.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
You're listening to Good Job Brain, and this week we're talking about medicine and doctors.
So no surprise, I watch a lot of movies and TV. Mm-hmm. And when if you know me, this will not shock you, this statement. No. So I wanted to really talk about medicine and doctors and first aid as seen in movies and TV, precisely because so much of it is so bad and so wrong and so simplified from what you should actually do in real life situations. I actually had a hard time narrowing going down of just like the myriad ways that things are simplified or just backward in movies and TV. So I narrowed this down to three things I want to talk about that I think are that we all see a lot and that may not be portrayed in quite a realistic fashion. So the name of this segment is called Worst Aid, and I have to give credit to the website tvtropes.org.
Oh, it's a trope.
It's great. I mean, an invaluable resource to trivia and pop culture nerds. Again, you can spend hours on TV tropes. So tip of the hat for Worst Aid, the concept. So, all right, so the first thing, like, we've all seen enough medical dramas, right?
Yes.
You know, it's like, oh, the patient, you know, oh, he's flatlining, he's having a cardiac arrest. They get out the device, they're like rubbing the paddles together, they're like, clear, you know, and they're like, boom, you know, and the patient, maybe the heartbeat comes back to life, right? We've all seen this,
yes.
Right? All right.
Is that not right?
Well, I've got two questions for you guys. All right, two questions, all right. Okay, first of all, what are the paddles? Why are they rubbing the paddles together? They always do the rub the paddles together. What is that about?
Is it defibrillator? Is
that what
it's
called? It is a defibrillator.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right.
It has electronic charge.
Yeah, yeah.
Are they trying to get rid of, like, normal static?
It's funny. A lot of people think it's, like, a static thing or to, like, balance out the polarity or something like that. No, it's just they put gel on the paddles. It's just like,
They're lubricating it.
Yep, it's just a conductive gel, and they want to make sure that it's evenly coated on the paddles before they stick it on the patient's chest.
Okay.
And Karen, you're right. It is a defibrillator. Technically, it's an AED, an automated external defibrillator.
Okay.
And you can figure out what all those letters stand for there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, it's the gel. They never show you the gel.
They show the gel sometimes.
Sometimes?
Yeah.
Okay. I think on the more realistic the show, the more likely you are to see. Like on ER, I think like they were pretty good with this. Okay, so that's the one thing. Why do they yell clear? What's the clear? They always yell clear. And then
you should not be touching that body when that happens, right? Everybody get away from it because we're going to electrocute this person. Or what? Charge them.
Yeah. Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, you're right. It's like it's telling everybody in the vicinity, stand clear of the body.
Yeah.
Both also, we don't want you touching the body because we're about to send a charge through it, but also because, you know, when they do it, the body kind of jumps around a little bit, you know, it's like, stand clear, don't get
hands
hit.
Hands off all bets on the table.
Most of the time when we see an AED, a defibrillator in movies or TVs, it's grossly exaggerated. Like what it does, you know, what it can do, the extent of its abilities. So like the first thing that they get wrong, I guess, you know, is you need to use this device very, very quickly. Like if somebody is having a cardiac arrest, like the best time to use a defibrillator is like within just a couple minutes. Like you need to do this almost right away. Like you do CPR first. Then if that's not helping, if the heartbeat is not regular, you go to the defibrillator. And again, that's sort of the second part is like, if someone's already flatlining, like, no, this is not going to
reanimate,
jumpstart or, you know, like kickstart the heart.
Like the car.
It doesn't kickstart the heart.
This is if somebody has a fibrillation, you know, just in very simple terms, their heart is not beating effectively. Their heart is not beating regularly and effectively. It's kind of just the hope is that you just give it a jolt and it normalizes and stabilizes the heartbeat. So it's beating regularly, not too fast, not too slow, and pumping blood effectively. That's the thing that you're trying to get back to normal.
So it does send a charge.
It does send a charge.
What is the science behind the charge through?
In very basic terms, the science behind it is that we're electric beings. That, you know, we have electrical impulses traveling through our bodies, and our heart is in some way an electric organ. So it's kind of just to sort of reset it. It's like hitting your reset switch if you really want to simplify it. And again, you go CPR first. CPR is the first order. And
you
go to the shock.
Please don't electrocute anyone.
You know, please don't ever like pull a wire out of the wall. You know, it's like, oh, we'll do a homemade shock.
It's like those comedies.
A Jason Statham movie. No, that will not work. You will kill somebody doing that.
Make it worse.
not only do you want to use this device quickly if you are going to use it, but if it doesn't work the first time, it's you're not going to keep, we'll do it again, we're going to do it one more time, you know, and then
wake up.
The third or fourth, the dramatic charge, you know, the person comes back to life. No, in fact, like, with each successive time you do it, your chances of success
are... Why do they do this in TV
It's dramatic.
Movies?
It's so dramatic. Oh, that's why they do it. That's why they do it.
Tuck on your heartstrings.
and although this was, true at one time, they were a lot noisier and flashier. Like these days, the really modern ones, they don't go the cha-chunk. They don't make the violent sound that you see. The body doesn't flail around wildly. It's much more mild from top to bottom, a mild device and interaction.
That makes sense that they would have improved that.
After years and years and years.
Like you get a concussion from it.
It's like a rag doll.
Yeah. I think we touched on this one briefly in the Wilderness episode of snake bites. Like what to do in a snake bite, right? You know, again, we've all seen the Westerns. First of all, hold still. You got the bite. I'm gonna suck out the poison. I'm gonna suck out the poison.
Yes.
If you are with somebody and they get a snake bite.
Yeah.
For the love of God, please do not suck out the poison.
Yeah, because when I was a kid, I was like, okay, it's in your body. Why do you want it to be in someone else's body?
Yeah.
Because it's toxic. Yeah.
Believe it or not, turns out putting your mouth on a poison wound, not good for anybody. The biggest problems are, one, you can transfer bacteria from your mouth to an open wound on a person.
Yeah.
Not good.
Sure.
You can transfer venom or poison from the wound into your mouth.
Your mouth don't want to do that. Permeable.
Exactly. You're so sensitive.
Yeah.
Also, like, just if you're, like, making incisions or suction or pressure, like, you can just increase damage to the tissue, to the organs, whatever.
Oh, my God. You know, it's funny. It's not even Western. Like, growing up in Asia, like, that's a trope, too.
I have some – these are instructions here. This is what to do in the event of a snake bite.
Okay.
This is from the Mayo Clinic all sources. You may see these in a slightly worded differently, but pretty much all the authorities agree these are the steps. If a snake bites you, stay calm. First rule of any trauma, calm, don't panic, immobilize with the arm or leg that you've been bitten, loosen your clothing in case you start to swell.
Why?
Because, you know, if you have, say you've got like a tight ring or a tight shoe or something on and it starts swelling up, you don't want to constrict the blood flow. So take off jewelry, take off tight clothing.
Mm-hmm.
You do want to keep the wound below heart level. They do show that, you know, you want to keep it so, so at or below level of your heart. You want to maybe lightly clean it, but you don't want to like scrub it in there. You're not like, you know, you're not flushing it out. You want to just gently leave it alone. No tourniquets, no ice. Like that. Don't cut the wound. Don't try and suck the poison out. Don't try and get the venom out of there. The last step the Mayo Clinic advises
is go to the doctor.
Don't try to capture the snake.
Okay, we'll believe you.
I can assure you, like, that's going to be the last thing on my mind is capturing
the snake. Because people think, I got to show the doctor what kind of snake
or
it is.
I think you're
get
right.
Get the serum or something.
They do say, try and remember the color and the shape so you can, so you can pick them out of a lineup, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yes, please do not try and make an incision and suck the venom out. No, you're just going to make things worse for everybody. Get to a doctor. I mean, like, again, for all of these situations, first rule, get to a doctor.
Okay.
All right, the last one, the third thing that I've seen this in so many movies and TV shows, especially in the 80s.
Yeah.
All right, someone gets shot. You know, they're in a gunfight. You're like, all right, hey, hang on, buddy, hang on.
Okay.
All right, just sit still. First thing you gotta do is get that bullet out.
No.
The first thing, you do not need to get the bullet out. Like, just the general rule of thumb is, in almost every situation, getting the bullet out is the last thing
that
a medical professional would try and do.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, it's only in the case of, like, if the bullet is, like, still loose in your body or, you know, moving around and continuing to cause more trauma, you leave it in there. It's okay. Especially with modern ammunition, it is true that most of the time the bullet will self-sterilize. The bullet itself is going to be a hot chunk of metal. The bullet itself is going to be sterile most of the time. What you're at danger of is germs or dirt or
in the wound,
bits of fabric, bits of debris that may have gotten pushed into the wound along with the bullet.
Interesting.
So it's like, you know, we'll see, like, the hero's, like, heating up a knife in the flame. It's like, this is going to hurt a bit, but I'm going to get it out. Oh, no, don't do this.
And then you hear the thuk, and it falls in, like, a little metal bowl. I got it out.
Or a paper clip or something.
It's funny. I'm always like, and then what? Because now they have a big bloody hole.
Exactly. Yeah. You can cause more damage by trying to get this bullet out. Yeah. Again, the number one rule, get to a doctor, get to an emergency room, and, you know, they'll clean the wound. They'll take a look at it. They'll make sure there's not any internal bleeding. And really, once they've taken care of everything else, then they'll, all right, now we can go in and get this bullet out.
Wow. God, this makes me think, like, what else do these things get wrong? Maybe, like, pregnancy, like delivering, like, a kid.
There is you're right. The whole just litany of things around pregnancy, for sure.
Yeah. God, it's so interesting that you're talking about the first thing, defibrillators and electricity in your body. I mean, you're like, oh, yeah, because we're electrical beings and we, you know, how our brains tell us to move our knee. I mean, that's through it's crazy to think that's like
electrical impulse
from one end to another end is through charges communicating from one part of our body to another. People didn't know that before. Back then, people did not know how we move.
It still seems like magic.
What animates us. Yeah.
Yeah. And there were so many theories. One of them was called the balloon theory, that we're made out of like hydraulic pressure, like pistons or something, that's how we move our muscles, is a series of air and fluids and tubes.
Interesting.
You know, that's how,
They had just discovered hydraulics, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Very, like, excited. This is maybe,
or pneumatics, I suppose.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, we're talking about, like, God, 1600, 1700, like, people are still trying to figure it out. And it took one person's accident that basically made us finally realize, oh, what makes us move is electricity. And all of our cells have electricity. And this is what happened. It sounds so crazy. So this one guy, Luigi Galvani, he was a dabbler in medicine. I mean, he's an actual, dabbler. He actually had degrees. Okay. He's actually
a professional.
He's a professional at that point.
The story goes that Galvani was working on dissecting a frog on a table. And that table previously he was experimenting with static electricity by rubbing the frog skin. And the legend goes, Galvani touched an exposed nerve of the frog, the sciatic nerve, so the main nerve down the frog's spine, with a metal scalpel that was charged because of the previous static charge experiment. And once that scalpel touched the nerve, this dead dissected frog's, its legs moved, its legs flipped and moved. I mean, this is a dead frog, half of a frog. It doesn't even have the top half. Just the bottom half of the spine.
That's freaky enough. Yeah.
Yep. And so he was like, whoa, what happened? I guess they kept electrocuting
this. I would do it again. Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. You would do it again.
Yeah, we just have to make sure. And then you do it the third time just to make sure.
And that's what makes it science.
And then you bring some people over and you're like, watch this.
I can make the frog dance. Yeah. This dead frog dance. And so he developed the theory and his research on electricity and animation. And that is electricity that powers movement.
And I had heard about the frog before. You're saying that may be embellished, or that's just, or it's some,
or maybe simplified.
Okay. Like, maybe it wasn't quite as much of a serendipity, maybe.
We're not sure. But I mean, this does make sense because there are drawings, notations that did support that this happened, because there are tons of diagrams that he drew in his research papers, with frog legs and they're moving and this is how you electrocute a frog. A lot of scientific drawings, very scientific. Okay. So Galvani coined the term animal electricity. So he got the fact that electricity does cause animation or movement, but not entirely how or why. So his theory was that it was the frog's pelvis. There was something in the frog's pelvis that would release energy or some control. And he thought that it was maybe a special fluid. And so he thought that their activation was a special fluid that was in the muscle when it is not, right? Then his adversary, Alessandro Volta, also believed in something about electricity. And his finding is that each cell is kind of like a battery, not just one part of the frog. It is all of the parts of the frog that have some sort of ability to work as like an early battery. And of course, Galvani and Volta, those seem like very familiar names. Volta is where we get volt, the word volt from. And Galvani, galvanization, galvanized into action, sprung into action. Mm-hmm. Galvani's report about basically these moving dead frog legs using electricity was mentioned specifically by a Miss Mary Shelley. Part of her inspiration of course, Frankenstein.
Right. And electrocutes him.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And why, like, that, I guess it's a trope. I don't know. Does that count as a trope? Yeah. Whenever mad scientists are trying to reanimate things, it's always through electricity.
Yeah.
And it's thanks to Luigi Galvani and his dead frog legs.
It's true. I mean, you got to imagine, like when you're first hearing about that, it's like, wow, so electricity is animating dead matter. That's what it is. I'm going to write a story about that.
These are just legs.
Yeah. He must have screamed so loud.
Oh my God.
He must have been.
But we don't know if it's, like the defibrillator, if it's like the legs danced wildly or is it just like a little pulse?
Yeah. It's true. That's the part that he doesn't tell you.
And so when I was reading this, I was thinking, when you're in like elementary school, you try to make a battery out of a potato.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I was like, what if you wire a potato and then put the two ends on the dead frog? Will that just self-sustain? Like the dead
back
frog will just keep moving? Yeah.
You've discovered perpetual motion. Yeah.
Everybody shush! William Shatner has something to say.
Cat and Jethro, box of oddities.
What do you do when the woman you love dies? Well, of course, you dig her up and you live with her.
Aww.
The show examines weird things.
There are plenty of old photographs from this time period of children out in the streets playing in and among the dead horse carcasses.
Oh, I miss those days. Things used to be so much simpler.
Cat and Jethro.
Then there's the urine wheel, which sounds like a really bad game show.
They've done weird things. Cat and Jethro, box of oddities. That is really mysterious.
Join Cat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
The Webby Award-winning Box of Oddities podcast from Airwave Media.
Well, we can close out here. I had this in the course of doing research. I found this fun fact.
Is it really fun?
It was fun.
Chocolate hostage.
I don't know if anything is
beats chocolate hostage
levels. Oh. Yeah, I predict next week someone's pub quiz team name is going to be Chocolate Hostage. Did you guys know that during Prohibition, doctors were allowed to write prescriptions for alcohol?
So that
makes sense.
It's illegal to buy.
It was highly regulated. You couldn't do it for leisure purposes, but your doctor could write you a prescription. Yeah, my patient needs
whiskey
or wine.
Needs some Smirnoff Ice.
Yeah.
Needs a soother.
I read that it was among the most abused prescriptions in American history.
They must have gotten so many bribes.
I'm sure, yes.
Yeah. Give me my Smirnoff Ice.
Right, or cross-prescribing to other doctors, right.
Oh, good point.
Yeah.
All right. And that is our show. Thank you guys for joining me. And thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you enjoyed weird vocabulary used in hospitals, playing video games, frog legs, and also TVs and movies getting it wrong. Of course, you can find our show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and on our website, Good Job Brain. And thanks to our sponsor, Warby Parker. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.